It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome in to the Scotty Johnny podcast. I'm your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, Scotty Johnny himself. And with me, as per usual, is Aaron Cheddar Talk Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man?
Well, it's kind of a downer for a Victory Monday kind of feel for us.
I don't know. A win is a win. It would have been a much bigger downer if it would have been an L. I thought it was going to be an L there for a while.
We'd be slurring over our words right now if we'd lost that, because we'd both be deep in the drink.
I'll take a crappy W any day over a heartbreaking or just stupid L. I'll tell you that much, because that would be two stupid L's in a row.
Because you and I survived the 80s, and we know what L's feel like for a lot of L's in a row. And
even the early 90s, the Keith Woodside days.
Yeah. Anyhow, thank you everybody for joining us on the show, wherever it is you're listening to us, whether it's here or Australia or Ukraine or Germany or France or Canada, wherever you are.
Hello, Belarus.
Yeah, so many different wonderful places around the world. Thank you for joining us. Remember, you can follow this show at Scotty Johnny Pod on Twitter. You can follow me at Not So Humble Host. And Aaron is also in the Twitterverse. And Aaron, where do they find you there?
Am I?
I follow you, so I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I've been at it lately too. You can find me at Cheddar Talk, John. At Cheddar Talk, at Cheddar like the cheese talk, like what comes out of your mouth. At Cheddar Talk.
All right,
take it away, John.
Please remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. The rates and reviews do help other people find the podcast, so it's always good to have that. We will be joined by a special guest a little later in the show here to help us through next week. But we're going to get everything kicked off talking Packers in what we call our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, Aaron. So main event is Packers win, but we're not feeling particularly happy about the way that it went down. This one was still in, it was still being contested right up to the end. I mean, like it was not decided till kind of late.
Just like the election. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Wow. All right.
Wow.
Painful. All right. But anyhow.
That was a softball, John. Come on.
That was a softball. So, I mean, this is the thing that's just going to get me this entire time is that Jacksonville offense was not particularly good. They were starting Luton free type of offense.
Yes. It was a Luton free offense.
Man, if they'd have had Gardner Minshew, well, I guess maybe they would have taken it more seriously, but Gardner Minshew in that game would have won at that point.
Probably. Man, I don't know what the deal is with Jacksonville and benching that dude. I don't get it. But anyhow.
Isn't he hurt?
That's right. He was at first it was gonna be a benching, and that's right. Then it came out that he was hurt. That's what it was. Sorry. Yep.
Yeah. So I mean Luton was just like 18 of 35 for 169 yards. He didn't look particularly good. He made a couple plays here and there. Jaguars are the beneficiaries of one terrible holding call. It's probably the worst offensive holding penalty I've ever seen called. I'm trying not to be hyperbolic, and I really do try to avoid the hyperbole, but it was Billy Turner, and the guy goes inside, and he pushes him, and his arm gets out in front of him, but he never at any point grabs anything, and that arm doesn't prevent the guy from doing anything because Rodgers runs back to his right, so essentially the guy would have to go back through Billy Turner's body. It wasn't a hold. He didn't grab anything at all. It was a ridiculous holding, and that took a touchdown off the board, and we had to settle for a field goal because of that.
Okay, I'm gonna sidebar early and often here. So cool. First of all, go to at Cheddar Talk and look at my retweet from Pat McAfee about the announcers, the color analysis people that aren't the main ones. he has some strong words to say about them. And some of them would be the ones that had the Packer game this week. He doesn't call them out by name, but Greg Jennings, Chris Myers, and Brock Heward might be the worst team ever. There was another call earlier in the game too, where Billy Turner got pushed into the middle of the line and got called for a chop block.
Yes.
That was just garbage. And they're like, well, you, by the letter of the law, you got to call that. And it's like, no,
he didn't engage him in a block.
He got shoved into that dude's legs. And it's like, and then I also had some other comments about Greg Jennings ever being allowed to do color analysis for any Packers games, because he is a known Packers hater and has biases against the Packers. It's like, why would you give him a platform during a nationally televised or a regionally televised game? Like,
he tells Greg stories on there that you know are lies, because
Greg Jennings always does that. Terrible. And I know that's exactly who Pat McAfee was going after, and he didn't say any name, because Pat McAfee even prefaced it by saying that he's like, yes, I tried to be a announce guy. Now I've got a YouTube show and I'm doing well with it and I can cuss and swear on here. So he's like, I'm out of the game now and I'm not trying to take these people's jobs, but good Lord, make them go to high school games or something like that. And I know exactly who he's going after. He's going after Greg Jennings, Heward, and Jonathan Vilma, who also did a terrible job this last week too. And it's like, bad. It's not just against Packers either. Greg Jennings did a, anytime you ever hear him doing that, it's like, why do they put him on the air? I mean,
Greg Jennings can't do any play-by-play or color analysis, because the only thing Greg Jennings talks about is Greg Jennings.
Right. And I mean, I could even see him doing like a Tennessee Saints game and being like, well, on that play right there, Drew Brees threw the ball a little bit early. You know, Aaron Rodgers couldn't make that play at all. You know, I know, because I played with Aaron Rodgers and he wouldn't have made that throw, and he's gutless, you know, and it's stupid. And anyways, where was I going?
Two other great points from that in terms of the play calling. There's one where the Packers, they kicked the ball and it went through the end zone, and they're like, well, we'll see what they call here. I'm like, they're going to call a touchback because it went through the end zone, dummy. And I said that out loud, exactly like that. And there was go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, it was right after that Billy Turner chop block call where they're like, well, by the letter of the law, I went, you know what? Mute. And then I put Wayne and Larry on the radio and dealt with the delay, like, which was a good 3-second delay this week down here.
Yeah, but my dad got me the Radio Shark, which allows you to actually get rid of the delay. I just didn't turn it on this week. I had too many other things going on. There was another one, though, that was great. They clearly didn't understand who was on the field at one point, because they started describing that Myers was describing how he was about to start saying it. He started down that path and caught himself. He's saying, Jace Sternberger, who is normally a backup tight end, is back for, and and they're about to snap. I was like, you thought he was going to receive the punt, because you couldn't tell that was not a tall white guy back there, number 87, and didn't know. It was like 27 or whoever it was back there. I don't remember.
I would encourage anybody to go to my feed on Twitter and find the Pat McAfee show clip, because he says what I want to say on this podcast, but John limits me to what kindergartners can hear on the show. Otherwise, I would say exactly what Pat McAfee wants to say. I used to call high school football games. I'm not saying that I was ever nominated for any mural awards, or I am not Al Michaels. I'm not saying that. I did some really bad. There was a couple broadcasts that were just bad when I just got thrown, like, oh, you got to go out to ESCO and cover the ESCO Cook County game. Okay, I have no idea who's on either team. And I'm literally saying number 87 just got tackled by number 51, because I don't know, because they don't have their names on the back. And I'm sitting on the top of a van watching this game. So, like, I've been there. I've done this. This is the NFL, a billion-dollar organization with billion-dollar sports contracts. Maybe you should train your people before you go. I mean, it's garbage. I could have done a better job during the Packer game. And I say that with 57% confidence.
Excellent.
Yes.
So in this game, the big thing is, like, Aaron Rodgers looks like he had a great game. He had like 200 yards at half, ended with 325, two touchdowns and a pick. That pick was terrible. It was a weird pick. It's not the sort he normally throws. He had 108 rating. I mean, like, it looks great on paper, but there were just some plays where he just did not have that look, where he just things weren't connecting. I mean, there were two really weird drops by Adams in this game too, and then Adams just ridiculous fumble. But Rodgers, for whatever reason, playing outside in the wind, he's not as accurate as he has been. He looked better in the second half, and just for the first half, though, long bomb to MVS kind of masked for a while there that he was throwing a bunch of short stuff and not completing a lot of it. And it was disconcerting at that point. But the one thing you hope for is that means next week he comes out stronger and looks even better than, you know, what was a 24 of 34 for 325 game.
Right. So the way a team like Jacksonville beats you is on turnovers, weird penalties, and special teams. And Jacksonville had it all working for them. They had a big punt return for a touchdown, a weird interception of Aaron Rodgers, which you got to imagine, like, a Lambeau Field without people in the stands. That thing's got to be like a wind tunnel, man. That's 2 weeks in a row now. Like, the bodies would actually stop some of this wind from swirling instead of just bare metal.
Well, the thing is, with the way that they filled in the bowl so much now, it actually isn't as much wind down at the field level as there used to be. It's actually way better than it used to be, because the field actually goes, I mean, the bowl is completely filled in. It used to be kind of open, but now it's much different.
I'm still saying, though, like, just without the people in the stands, though, like, it's got to do something. It's got to make the wind's got to go. It has to swirl a little bit more in there. Either way, looking at those flags at the top of the uprights during the kicks, it couldn't have been that bad. I mean, that dude from Jacksonville drilled a 51 yarder, no problem. But anyhow, that's how you beat that's how a lesser team beats a better team, is with the special teams. They got that with the punt return. And I even said that when they returned that punt, I'm like, no, like, this is part of the equation. And then, of course, dumb penalties, which we have addressed against Turner, and then unforeseen turnovers, like you just said, Devontae with that weird fumble, Aaron Rodgers throwing a weird pick, you know, that he would never throw in 100 years, and just overall, just like the Packers just, like, playing down to their opponent. Like, Jacksonville was playing their butts off, and the Packers were finding every single way. And Wayne Larrabee said it at least five or six times during the broadcast. He's like, it's like, you know, you can hear it when Larry does the, you know, he does that in the background. You know, like, he's like, oh, it's just, it's one of those weird days. He's like, I don't know. And I'm just thinking, and that's why at the end of the game, I was just happy it was a W, because, and Larry was the same way too. Like, he was just like, he's like, that's one of those games that you lose, that you somehow find a way to lose. And somehow the Packers managed to, at the last minute, decide, oh yeah, that's right, we've got a good defense and we're going to sack this kid every time he goes back.
We don't.
Rashawn Gary. Hi, Rashawn Gary. Where have you been? Hi, good job. And it's just like, yeah, it's just the Larry Grumbles, as me and my dad always call him. The Larry Grumbles were out yesterday. Just like,
so, I mean, yeah, like, to your point, Jacksonville had a 7-play drive to start after the Packers had a 3-and-out, which is the first time this entire year we've had a 3-out. I think we've scored the first drive of every game up until this point. Yep. So we had a 3-and-out. That then leads to a field goal. Their next touchdown is a punt return touchdown. They then get the, they get the fumble where they have a 16-yard drive to a touchdown, and then they get the interception, which leads to a field goal. And that's their scoring for the day. Is 17 of the 20 points are off.
J.K. Scott out of nowhere shanks a punt.
Yeah.
For 20 yards. I mean, he's a good punter.
He is.
He doesn't shank punts. Sometimes there's punts that go a little bit long that end up being touchbacks, but he doesn't. Earlier in the game, he dropped one on the 5-yard line with backspin and it stuck.
Yeah,
he's just like a golfer. He's a great punter, but I mean, as soon as that one shanked, that was like, I don't know. Any smart Packer fan were just like, oh no, like, that's the worst thing that could have happened right now. Like, And then luckily there was a couple big plays by the defense to make that go away. So that was fantastic.
As a team too, the Packers, here's the big things that concern me. This, the play calling seemed so different than what we normally would do. Like, Tonyan was barely involved in this game. It felt like we threw deep a couple of times. One of them worked out, but I mean, like, at the same time, we couldn't run the ball anywhere. We had trouble getting any of that going. We had trouble finding ways to just, I mean, like, we were running straight into people. It was just borderline, it was ridiculous the way that we were just running. I mean, we had a time where we had a chance to seal the game at the end, where we've got the lead and we've got the ball. It's third and one. Get one. We ran straight ahead. You know, we don't have a fullback. We just ran as straight ahead as we could, right into the teeth of the defense that had been doing that to us all day. It just felt like we weren't learning from what had happened in the first half. Like, we went in with a 17-10 lead, and we felt like we had it, and then we didn't do anything. Then the next half, Jaguars came in, and it was a tie game going into the fourth. I don't know.
And we were behind in the fourth too for a split moment there after a field goal. I actually wrote this down. I forget. My thumbs were on fire on Twitter yesterday during the game, but so I forget, between Nagler and Herman and Berkovitz and some of the other usual Twitter followers, someone mentioned, oh, I didn't realize they fired LaFleur and brought back McCarthy for this game. And I was like, yes. And actually, that's what it was. I think it was Berkovitz that said that. And then Nagler said something about this offense didn't look the same. And I responded with, yeah, I didn't realize that high winds had anything to do with pre-snap motion. Like, it literally looked like Mike McCarthy came back from Dallas to play this game. There was no motion. I mean, that, like you said, that play with Aaron Jones, nine men on the line, Aaron Rodgers at quarterback and one running back. And we're just going to try and plug it up the middle, which is not a strength of this team. How about like five people in motion pre-snap and do that thing that Mahomes did last week where the quarterback goes in motion before the snap, you know, and like get the defense moving around. It's like they just lined up and just, it was like, it literally was just trying to play power football. And I get it, it's windy, you want to do that, but I mean, let's use some motion. You want to be like San Francisco? How did San Francisco carve up the Packers in the NFC Championship game last year? With a ton of motion, fullback, Juszczyk moving around, Mostert moving all over the place, getting people off balance. Instead, the Packers just were like, here we're just going to line up and we're just going to throw this at you Stratego style, you know, and just stop us. And
it was strange that way. Yeah, like, you would think that the Packers offense, the way that it is normally constituted, the way it is normally called, is almost windproof. We don't throw deep a ton. They save it up and run one or two of those type plays to take their shots. But generally, it's crossing routes. Generally, it's fullback working back, or, you know, tight end, H-back, whatever you want to call it, working his way back across the formation. And it's, you know, zone run to one side, setting up the rollout back to the other side with a tight end and then a wide receiver deep of him. And we didn't do almost any of that. This is why Tonyan has been valuable for this team so far, but we didn't do any of that this week.
What's LaFleur's bit coming off buys, by the week? Coming off buys, by the way. I know it wasn't a buy, but coming off the Thursday night football game, it's like called the mini buy, right? Like, you play Thursday and then you get a couple extra games. And they come off flat. They came out flat after the bye against the Vikings. Yeah. And then it's like two times now they've overlooked opponents because the Colts are obviously the bigger opponent going forward.
That was the point I was going to get to next, too, is I think what you hope, I guess, is that they were trying to overlook this, what is legitimately a bad team. And the only reason the Packers win this game, we did not outcoach this team. We're just far more talented all across the field than the Jaguars are.
Exactly.
And that's the one thing that saved us at the end, is just, we just happen to be more talented. And Rashawn Gary,
it's like I said, taking a bad W is better than taking an even worse loss, because if they would have actually lost that game, that would have been devastating. At least you can say, well, because we were so much better than they were, at least we could overcome absolutely everything we did wrong, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, and that's the thing. It's just like, it was just, it was bad that way. It just it didn't feel like they were doing this right. And the talk at Abbey Packing, just people saying things like, you know, no one in the media there is going to question LaFleur on this or get him to try to say, like, what in the world? What? Why were you doing all of this wrong and differently than you normally would approach an actual, just a normal game, a game that you cared about? You would not have approached it like this. Is he trying to save it from film? There's nothing he does that's particularly not going to be on film already.
Did McCarthy leave a playbook in the desk that you just happened to open up and you hadn't seen it before anywhere? Like, hey, let's try this stuff out for a little bit.
Yeah. Just a strange, strange one all around. And
it was an odd. So those are my biggest takeaways. Like I said, too, the thing where someone brought up, and I want to say it's Eli Berkovitz, said that did we bring back McCarthy? And it just felt like a standard McCarthy game from like 2017, where it's like, what are you doing? Like, why are you just move some people around or something? I mean, it's been refreshing to see this with Matt LaFleur's offense, where everybody's in motion and they create people open and there's these big gaps. It was like, I don't know, man.
Like you said, we lost a turnover battle. We gave up a punt return touchdown and we just stumbled our way to a victory over a team who just is terrible. The Packer team, though, you can't deny it, was not ready for the game this week. They were not prepared. Nope. That all falls on the head coach. The defense continues to be a lack of planning. The number of like important third downs where we rush three blows my mind. It's impossible to think about. At the end of the game, we rushed four, and Gary destroyed their right tackle just through the end of the game there. Just
yeah,
a couple big plays there, and he actually, I think, had seven pressures on the day. He had some pretty decent ones, not all winners, but he had some pretty good pass rushes on the day. And it just, yeah, they can't play like this again in the next week.
This is I think Penton's going to be gone after the end of the season. Like, it's...
I don't get this part either. This is the other big takeaway I have, is just like, why is Penton afraid to blitz? Why is he afraid to blitz? This is like the two biggest games where you're like, this is a game where you blitz. You attack the quarterback because that's how you're going to win. It's Tampa Bay, where we never blitzed Brady, who is, I think his feet are actually just in the ground somewhere. I mean, like, he doesn't move. He's not getting away from anybody.
He's a Minecraft thing. he's a Minecraft person at this point.
I mean, like, he's not going anywhere. So you attack Brady's feet. That's how you win the games against Brady's teams. And we couldn't do it. We refused to do it.
No, we're gonna drop seven and let him try and pass against us.
Yeah, run. We're gonna come at him with three or four pass rushers, and that was a terrible idea.
And we did. Sean Payton seemed to figure it out against him. Just, hey, we're gonna put a whole bunch of people in your face, and yeah.
Right, it's what you do, and every one of us knew that. How does Pettine not just attack like that? He used to blitz.
That's what Belichick avoided for 20 years.
Yeah.
That's why he's the best.
Yeah, by throwing the ball quickly. And so this is the thing too, is in like in this game, you've got some rookie guy who's like a fifth or sixth round pick, I forget. And it's like, yeah, you attack him, make him rattled, get him nervous, make him throw the ball in the air. It didn't do that.
No, not at all. They made it. Hey, welcome to Lambeau Field. Your first time quarterback. Here, we're gonna just.
You should feel.
We're gonna make safe. This comfortable for you. We're just gonna let you roll. We're just gonna let you drop back and. Don't worry about it.
He's relying, and this is the thing too, is like he's relying on the Smiths to just give him pass rush, and he's gonna put all his guys back and stop the big play. But it's like, man, you've got good corners. Send a linebacker every now and then. Bring five.
Do you remember the play that set the tone in the first Vikings game of the year? Really did. It was Savage. No, it was Alexander, who didn't know he was supposed to not blitz.
Oh yeah,
accidentally blitzed and made it buried.
He had a run read and missed it. Yeah,
yeah, because he was wrong. Buried Cousins, and the Vikings went in a shell right after that. Like it, because up to that point it had been back and forth, and the Packers had missed some opportunities, and then Alexander buries him in the end zone, and then
that's the only way he
could... out, oh, that was a mistake, because no way would Penton ever do a corner blitz.
He used to do those things, and I don't get it anymore.
I mean, Don Capers used to do great things too, when, you know, bringing people up. I mean, what Charles Woodson, or what was it? Charles Woodson had 5 sacks and dang near 10 interceptions in 1 year when he was working for, what is that what it was? Like when he was working for a defensive player of the year.
Something like that. I don't remember the exact numbers, but yeah, it's,
yeah, I mean, every once in a while, I mean, we never see corner blitzes.
Yeah,
with Pettine now. No, he just, I don't know if it's, and I don't know if it's a LaFleur thing or whatever, but you think that LaFleur, being a Sean McVay guy, would allow him, so you can't imagine that he's telling him not to blitz or anything like that, because, I mean,
McVay had
You know the offense can make up a difference if you fall behind because you made a dumb mistake, but it just seems like it's this, it's prevent. And this has been like 40 years of this as me being a Packers fan, except for a couple brief moments. Like Dom Capers during the Super Bowl year was like, hey, let's go get the quarterback. That sounds like a great idea. Who are we going to send? We'll send anybody. Back in the 90s, it was like, hey, we're going to blitz Leroy Butler. Sure, sounds great. All 90s team, you know? It's like, yeah. I just don't know. I don't know why the Packers as an organization have this kind of just – we're just going to go into prevent now, and we're going to drop 7 and rush 3, and just we're going to play bend but don't break defense.
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah, the big thing is just that might have worked better, I guess, this week had we not had the punt return and the interception and the fumble, because that especially hurt us there. Right. But at this point, you know, we talked about this, you know, the Vikings game, this game, and then the Bucks game, which we won one of those at least. But yeah, Packers 7-2, best record in the conference.
Right.
Vikings beat the Bears, thank you, this week. So we're 3 games up on the Vikings and, 2.5 up on Chicago? Because they've played 10. We've only played 9.
Hey, but, so another sidebar. I'm going to tweet you about being the number one overall. I tweeted you about this last night. Russell Wilson is going to get... I'm not going to use the K word because he'll still walk away from it. Did you watch that game yesterday? He was getting just smoked. Like he was getting hit hard. Like he doesn't even have a chance to get out of not like Drew Brees getting hit hard yesterday. Whoa. Anyways, but I mean, it was just every single play. And like, you can like see the will of Russell Wilson, like fleeting his body. Like I can't do this every game. And he's not like Aaron Rodgers where he can like tiptoe out of stuff, because that's not the game that he's made for himself. His game is I'm going to roll around and get open, and you know, I'm going to duck pass rushers and stuff like that. And I'm going to run for big first downs and stuff like that. And I'm going to not be afraid of taking a hit once in a while. Like, I don't know, man. I watched that Rams Seahawks game yesterday, and Russ Wilson is starting to look defeated. Like you can tell he's carrying that Seahawks team on his back, and he's got
to outscore everybody. Yeah. Cause he's got no defense, and he's got some nice receivers, but you know, Noel's running backs are hurt all the time, but
Right. One of my friends asked me about that on a DM on Twitter. They were like, are you going to like what's wrong with Russ Wilson? And I'm like, he's scared right now. Like, cause he drops back and they're like, well, he's got good wide receivers. And he does in DK Metcalf and Lockett, but anyways.
All right. And so now we're going to move into our segment that we have our special guest this week, Lawrence Owen. You can follow him at Colts_law on Twitter. He does the Colts Law podcast. You also do a video blog, right, Lawrence?
Yes. I'm actually on sportscaster.com and on YouTube, where I do a lot of video coverage, not of just the Indianapolis Colts, but the NFL in general. And I do some all 22 film room breakdowns. If people ever want to send me emails or tweets or something requesting, I'm more than happy to look at those and maybe put out some content like that.
Perfect. He is officially more ambitious than I am, John.
We're going to be getting, I mean, like, I've listened to your podcast, and we're going to have quite a bit more energy than normal. I'm going to be left behind here pretty shortly, I think. So the first things that we want to talk about is the biggest concern, obviously, coming off this game that we just had. The Jaguars are not a particularly great running team. I'm trying to look at where they generally fit somewhere in that they're 22nd pass, but 13th as a rush offense. Now, I guess that's a DVOA is what I'm using, the metric one, the you know, not just straight numbers. Indianapolis actually isn't that much higher. They're 21 on DVOA as a run offense, but they have quite a bevy of running backs, including our beloved Jonathan Taylor. So just what are you thinking when you see that Packers run defense this week?
I am hoping that Jonathan Taylor might be able to get it going, because Jonathan Taylor's went up against multiple teams where we have looked at and went, well, okay, this run defense isn't very good. Maybe Jonathan Taylor can get out there and really start to string together some big runs. He has yet to break a big run from getting the football behind the line of scrimmage. He's gotten a lot of swing passes out of the backfield for big yardage, but nothing off of handoffs, and we're waiting on that. He has yet to learn, as I said earlier before we started this, he has yet to learn that in the NFL, guys are bigger, stronger, faster. They will tackle you. You cannot run over everybody in the NFL. And Marlon Mack, the guy who went down for Indianapolis in week one, he was known for being able to shift his weight and juke people and make people try to make arm tackles rather than full body tackles. Jonathan Taylor and him have been talking over these past few weeks after Marlon Mack's Achilles surgery, and hopefully he's going to understand this. And I understand that this is a Packers podcast, but I would like to see Jonathan Taylor break out a little bit in this game.
Well, we're not going to ask you to disavow your fandom.
We'd love to see Jonathan Taylor break out too, just not this week, because we already have enough problems with a former Badger and Russell Wilson. Yeah. As Packer fans, we don't need to hate Jonathan Taylor too. So let's wait till next week, right?
Russell Wilson didn't look all that good yesterday. So
no, I mean, he
did not have a day. Now, Jonathan Taylor, sorry. Right now, DYAR, another one of those the metric type stats people love using. It's a Football Outsiders puts that one out. They've got Jonathan Taylor at 20th among running backs, right behind like Frank Gore and Adrian Peterson. So that's not the greatest, but that's in basically just how effective they can be in terms of, you know, how they're running the ball this way. Their success rate, at least, is what they're kind of talking about. And so I guess, where is it he's not finding? The big thing that he did well at Wisconsin was that in the way he was able to pass the guys ahead of him his freshman year was he understood fit very, very well. And we talked a little bit before the show. The Badgers do use some zone block elements. They do run more with a fullback every now and then. And they don't run as much single back. It's a little different than pro, but Paul Chryst runs a pro type offense. What's the thing that's kind of getting in the way of that looking more like it would have, other than the fact that he doesn't have a all Wisconsin offensive line?
Well, I mean, Indianapolis' offensive line is darn good. They've got a lot of high picks all the way across the line. I mean, for instance, Phillip Rivers, the least sacked quarterback in the NFL right now, and the guy don't move. So that's got to say something about the offensive line. Jonathan Taylor, he's not as patient as what you would like with an Indianapolis Colt running back because of their zone scheme, the way they like to pull guards and things of that nature. As soon as he gets the football, if he sees a hole, he hits it immediately. Or even if he thinks there's a hole there, he's going to hit it immediately. He's not following and being patient with the blocks in front of him, waiting for that predictable hole that is supposed to open up. And that's the problem that we're having with him right now is his patience.
And that's very strange to hear, because that was one of his biggest strengths at Wisconsin. He understood how it was going to set up, and he waited. I mean, maybe it takes him a year to figure some of that. You guys have also a couple other guys. Nyheim Hines had a great week last week. Looked very, very good out there.
Yeah,
you got the ability to run the ball with a couple different guys as you go. So
Oh, yeah, yeah. Colts running back stable has been solid. Losing Marlon Mack definitely hurt, but the fact that, I mean, we had Jonathan Taylor, Jordan Wilkins, and as you say, Nyheim Hines. Nyheim Hines is basically kind of like your scat back, your LaDainian Tomlinson type of running back, right? Mm-hmm. And incredibly good at catching the football out of the backfield. But one thing that he's very good at is not taking a hit head on, even inside the tackles. When he runs the football, if he sees someone coming on, he's able to shift his body weight at the last second and spin out of it or juke out of it. Very different runner than what Jonathan Taylor is, where you expect Jonathan Taylor just to lower his shoulders and try to run over somebody, and Hines is not that way at all.
Okay. Now, we look at, I mean, you've talked about Rivers a little bit there. It's going to be a fun situation where you're like, you had something like the Packers have, which, I mean, it's the only two teams in history that I can think of that have had that kind of luck, other than, I guess, the 49ers going from,
yeah,
you know, Montana to Young. But, I mean, they brought him in. Young was already a starter in Tampa Bay, so it's a little different. But, man, just when you say, like, we had Manning and then Luck and, you know, Philip Rivers comes in, you're like, you're a step down from our last two. I mean, that's a pretty good spot to be.
You're still a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback, mind you. Yes.
How is he?
Oh, yeah.
This is the thing that's, I guess, a little concerning is, I mean, I'm looking at your past numbers. Hines and Taylor are first and fourth on this team in receptions. And Zach Pascal has got 330 yards. He's the only receiver over 300 yards. Hilton's at 291. Pittman's come on. I think his numbers have been better of late. I don't watch it religiously, but I really do think he's a good receiver. And I guess, how do you look at them? We're assuming that at least Jair Alexander is most likely to be a go this week. And we're hoping Kevin King is. He's obviously had injury problems throughout his career. But if they have both of those with Josh Jackson going back to the third cornerback and then Shandron Sullivan there, what are you looking for from your receivers as they go against the Packers defensive backfield, which is really the strength of that defense?
All right. So a little background on the Colts receiving core. They've been dealing with injuries as well throughout this season. You touched on Michael Pittman Jr. He got hurt, I think, week three or four, had to have two surgeries on his calf. Was gone for about four games, came back against the Lions a couple weeks ago, was on basically like a snap count, and then they just let him free last week against the Titans, in which he really came on strong, had a bunch of catches, over 100 yards receiving. Michael Pittman's going to be a very solid receiver, I believe, for the Indianapolis Colts. T.Y. Hilton also has been dealing with a lot of injuries. He's a groin injury. So when you're a smaller, faster receiver, a groin injury really hampers everything that you can do. So they just kept him off the field and let him fully heal up before he come back. Zach Pascal, he was the guy last year when Hilton and Paris Campbell and everybody went down. He's basically like your third or fourth receiver on this team. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Phillip Rivers is new to the Colts. Now, a lot is being made of the fact that, you know, Rivers and Reich, they know each other from the past over in the Chargers, but it was only for 2 years. And right now, Reich is the head coach, so he's doing things a little bit differently, I'm sure, than what he was with the Chargers. So it's taking a while for Rivers not only to understand the full complexities of the playbook, but he also has to understand the receivers as well. You know, what they do in their routes, how they run their routes, the speed that they're running on the field, just getting the timing down with them. And over the past 4 weeks, I believe Rivers has done that much better than what he did the first 5 weeks.
All right. I do want to talk about, this is the part we've been saving this kind of towards the end of this discussion, but the entire thing that's going to be looked at this week, other than running backs going against that Packers defense, the Colts have the third ranked DVOA defense. It's fifth against the pass, second against the rush, going against the Packers, who have where are they? They're the second rated DVOA offense, ninth in rushing, third and pass. It's going to be, you know, immovable object and irresistible force, you know, sort of thing. What's the key matchups you're concerned about as a fan of the Colts that you're most worried about in this one?
Really, I am a little bit concerned because obviously with the way Aaron Rodgers can extend a play it from time to time and throw it deep, Davante Adams is a stellar receiver. Now, we have Xavier Rhodes, and I'm sure all you Packers fans know who Xavier Rhodes is. And there's been a lot being said about Xavier Rhodes, about how he has really stepped down the last couple seasons and not looked as good, but he's been injured on the Vikings after like week three, week four, dealing with lower body injuries. And right now, he is the number one ranked corner in the NFL when it comes to QBR against him. Is something like 41.5 or something like that. It's amazing. Now, granted, he won't be shadowing Adams. He sticks to one side of the field. So I think Adams will most likely be going up against our second-year corner, Rocky Sin, who is very, very physical. And the way Davante Adams plays, he might end up drawing some pass interference calls. That scares me. That scares me a lot because you can't give free plays to Aaron Rodgers in this offense.
Well, the other thing you have, the concern is always, I guess, from the other side, if you're guarding Davante, he's so good off the ball. Mm-hmm. If you get up and into him, the likelihood that he just gets past you is, I mean, the Vikings tried it a couple times early in the year and he just went by him. So that would be an interesting matchup for us in our perspective. Our concern is, what are we still looking at on the Packer side in terms of our second receiver? Generally speaking, it has been Tunyon, Robert Tunyon, as we've been told it is now pronounced, or has always been pronounced, I suppose. But he didn't do a whole lot this last week, and so there's obviously, I mean, we're trying to figure out why we were running something different this last week than what it normally looks like. So Tunyon's been very involved in the pass game. Our running backs are very involved in the pass game. They've finally been doing this year what Aaron and I have been begging them to do for years, which is, let's put Williams and Jones on the field at the same time because they're both great receivers. And so the offense here is more predicated on trying to get the ball out of Rodgers' hand quickly and then taking shots every now and then. So that's what we're hoping, is that we can get some plays there. Rhodes and Davante obviously have a history together. And Davante, I mean, you don't know this because you haven't been watching Viking games, but Davante over the last like 3 years has had a very good record against Xavier Rhodes. Though Aaron and I are smiling on the inside and on the outside too. Nobody else can see it on the recording here, but every Vikings fan this last year was like, well, those three guys we let go, all of them were terrible and we can replace them with anybody, just anybody. Anybody off the street is better than Xavier Rhodes is what they told us all off season. I was like, this is going to be amazing. We're so happy you think that's
well,
true.
Well, I mean, you cannot sit here and play a cornerback when he's got an ankle injury or a knee injury or a quad injury and expect him to be playing at the level that he was playing when he was an all pro. You can't expect that. And then force him to play and not get healthy. That's just going to completely destroy his season. And
yeah,
when you got something like that, you got to let guys like that rest and get healthy. That way you got them for if you make it to the playoffs.
That's because Mike Zimmer doesn't care about his players. Or he really health. Doesn't. Anyhow.
Or other team's players.
Or the other team's players' health either.
He's opposed to it.
See all the years that he was in Cincinnati and all the dirty plays that his defenses did down there. Yeah. Anyways, you'd probably know about that.
Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah,
there's one. That's his man-child baby.
Yeah,
he's put concussions on two different Colts players.
Yeah,
yeah. No, Vontaze Burfict is what Mike Zimmer wishes every defensive player played like.
Wow,
so, Anthony Barr.
Yeah.
So let's get your feels on this one. If you're picking this game, all right. If you had a thought, well, what's your feeling in terms of a score on this game?
Ooh. See, this is actually kind of a tough game to call because you are looking at a very good offense versus a very good defense, and one of them has to give. I do not expect a low-scoring game, even though the Colts can do that. They have done that to high-powered offenses before against Minnesota. Minnesota's got a very good offense. Their defense is god-awful, but their offense is very, very good, where the Colts just held them to piddly numbers. But Aaron Rodgers is a different animal. Aaron Rodgers right now, in my opinion, is playing the MVP of the NFL right now because, well, frankly, Russell Wilson has crapped the bed the past few weeks. So this is a game where I figure it's going to come down to whether or not Rivers turns the ball over at all in this game. And I think that Rivers has done very good the last 4 weeks. He's only thrown two picks in the last 4 weeks and has thrown seven touchdowns, I believe. So, I mean, he's done much better. But like you said, Green Bay secondary is very, very solid, and he still has not gotten 100% with his receivers. So if the Colts can hold Green Bay somehow to under 24, I think they have a shot at winning this game. Yeah. But that's a big if, because, like I said, Aaron Rodgers and of course, the run game that you have there, they're known for scoring more than 24 points a game generally.
Yeah, and so here's my big thoughts on this one, I guess, are if the Colts defense keeps us down, so, you know, like 17 type points or something like that, it's going to be a very hard day. The Packers defense has good, you know, they do a good job on the back end, but they do not produce a lot of turnovers. We were even pointing that out this last week. We got a pick this week, which has not been the norm for this team this season. So we have not been getting the turnovers, and against a team that has as much control over the field as a team with the, you know, the number three defense and a good running game, generally speaking, can do to you. This is a game that's concerned me for a while. I think it's going to be something like 17-14 or 21-17, and I guess this is not a game I feel comfortable about as a Packers fan. I'll just say that I think the Colts have a really good chance to take this one just because of the way everything lines up. They're just a matchup problem for the things we like to do. And I think it's going to be close. I don't think we're going to. I think Aaron said it was going to be 7-10, but he wasn't going to say who was going to win.
No, that was the Bears Vikings game
today. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about this game.
So my pick for the week. So here's my thoughts. And Lawrence, I'm not a total homer. I actually 2 weeks ago kind of hemmed and hawed whether or not I even wanted the Packers to win, because I figured that they were going to be overlooking the Vikings. John can back me up on that one. I didn't feel good about that game at all. And sure as hell, it didn't work out for us at all. And then this last week, the weather yesterday in Wisconsin, you guys might have had this down in Indiana too, we had like sustained 20 to 30 mile an hour winds with 50 mile an hour gusts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was basically from mid Wisconsin down through Indiana. So you know what that's like. So even Rodgers bat, like that touchdown catch that Devontae Adams had yesterday, you could tell like he would never have left him out to dry like that, because he got undercut hard and took a bad fall at the end of that play. And I'm really glad that he got up from that, because that was a bad fall. But Rodgers doesn't throw bad balls like that. His interception yesterday, he doesn't throw that interception ever, like an undercut interception because someone on a slant. No, that doesn't happen. But I'm and as a matter of fact, I actually pick John. What was my call on the show last week? I think I might have been off by a couple more points, but on Twitter I was only off by 1 point, because I said the game was going to be super close and uncomfortable. I won't say the rest of it because it was a little too derogatory for this podcast. But anyways, so I'm not a total homer, but you're not going to like this, Lawrence. So Aaron Rodgers in his two dome games so far, which were against the Vikings and the Saints. Where there's no weather, it's perfect conditions, and he can hear and he can call at the line. The big part of the reason why it didn't work out well against the Vikings and barely worked out against Jacksonville was because it was super windy both weeks. It was crappy, and it was Lambeau Field empty, which has got to be the most depressing thing if you're a Packers player, to look up in the stands and see nobody there. I think going down to Indianapolis, and it's going to be indoors in a controlled environment, I think it's going to look like the Saints and the Saints and the Vikings game, the first Vikings game of the year at US Bank Stadium. I think he's going to just, it's going to be surgical. And I really think they haven't scored over 30 points in 2 weeks. I think it's going to, the Packers are going to probably put up 35, 36. And yeah. The Colts, wow. I think if the Colts can keep up with their running game, that might bring it down. So I'm going to go average out here, and I'm going to go, I think the Packers are going to win like 31-20. Jeez. And I just think it's because Aaron Rodgers, after two bad weeks in a row, is going to, well, two bad weeks, bad quote unquote weeks. I think he's going to explode on a wind field. Anyways, so that's my thought.
I do want to step in and say the Colts have played every game so far at home with the roof open. Every game, even because we have a retractable roof.
I've never seen it open. I guess. Wow.
I've never seen it open either. But does it increase the wind at all, or is it?
I couldn't tell you. Well, it would obviously depend upon which direction the wind is coming from as well, because of the way the dome is, or the roof is slanted. It's kind of like barn wise.
Yeah, it's a very tall building. It's
John's been there. I've only driven past it. John got to watch the Badgers lose 59-0 to Ohio State there.
I also watched him beat Nebraska and Michigan State. Michigan State, by the way, the worst fans in football. Just the worst. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us this week. And, we look forward to, make sure that everybody, if you like hearing any good news about, Colts and listening to that, definitely good podcast, good video blog and stuff. Go listen to him. He's definitely somebody, at least just follow him on Twitter, if nothing else. I've been following him for a little over a year now because it's good information and good stuff to learn out there. So thank you again for joining us this week.
Hey, yeah, it's my pleasure, man. If you need me for anything, maybe we meet up in the Super Bowl. We could do this again.
That'd be fabulous. I'm on board.
I would absolutely love that more than anything else in the world.
All right. All right, so that's our Packer talk that we have for this week. We're going to move on now, get our Badger talk before we head to our last call on this one. Badger game was fantastic. We talked a little bit here about, like, hey, we remember, just like bad W's are better than good losses and all that, because we remember the 80s of being Packers fans. We also remember the 80s of being Badgers fans.
And the 80s, 70s, 60s.
Remembering, well, we don't remember those. Yeah. But no, I remember watching, I mean, the 60s, they had some good teams. They were a national championship runner-up in 62.
Right.
And this week, I mean, it brings all of that. The number of times in my life I watched those old Michigan teams just run up the score, leaving in starters Jabari, Wisconsin, in the 80s when they were national championship contenders and stuff. There is no amount of points Wisconsin could have scored on Michigan that would have made me feel content. There's no amount of points Wisconsin can score on Michigan, and I'll feel content.
We've discussed this on this podcast before. I'm not UW alum. I'm UW Superior. We didn't have a football team. And I've always watched the Badgers as more of a casual fan. And even I tweeted out, I was like, God, I hope Chris just runs this up. Just go, keep going. Just, there's no mountain high enough. Get up there, man.
Absolutely.
If you can score 100 points in a game, just do it. Do it right now.
And it was good. I mean, like, there were a couple things that weren't working. It was kind of like the opposite of the last game they played there, where we went out against Illinois and we're like, we're going to get Graham Mertz going. We're going to get him excited. We're going to do all this. And he was playing very, very well. Michigan, I guess, they could have gone more at him, but Graham Mertz was 12 of 22 for 127. He wasn't fantastic, but he wasn't bad. I mean, he had a couple. He had two touchdowns and no picks again. Knock on wood. Junior quarterback Joe Milton for Michigan got yanked, which is it's all glorious. I mean, I just love watching them. I mean, especially losing to Wisconsin, just because I have so much venom in my heart for Michigan. I just do. They were just such jerks to everybody when they were good. They deserve to be rolled, just rolled when they're not good, not just beaten. I mean, I don't want to take the starters out, and we did. We did. We gave mercy to that team, and we put in what you saw, too, at the end there is the future of this Badger running game, because Jalen Berger looked really good. 15 carries, 87 yards, 5.8. the best run of the day, of course, is John Chenal, whose brother's one of the inside linebackers, but it's Leo Chenal. John Chenal had a 43-yard rush. He's a fullback. And it was confusing. It was like that John Mulaney bit where it's just kind of like, you know, the horse in the hospital, except for he looked like the horse where he's just kind of looking around. I was like, what? How am I? I'm just still running. It's like, you don't normally get a fullback just suddenly in open fields in daylight, like just in the Elysium fields, just running around glorious and happy. He's like, what do I do? It's so weird to watch. It was just
it was
glorious. But yeah, I mean,
by the way, the Chenal kids are from my neck of the woods. You know that.
That's right.
Grantsburg. We used to play Grantsburg. That's kind of they were in the same conference. So anyhow. And actually my cousins that played for Lake Holcomb had to play against the Chenal kids.
Oh.
And when I went up to deer camp, which is this weekend, they used to talk about how those two were difficult to play against.
I would imagine.
So, and the one Chenal buried my cousin, who is the starting quarterback for Lake Holcomb, pretty badly one time. And he, yes, anyhow.
Four different Badgers players rushed for at least 65 yards. I mean, one's John Chenal, who had 43 on one play. Six carries for 71 yards. Six plays for 71 yards for our fullback, Danny Davis.
My God, I almost went back to the Jimmy Leonard story. Oh my God. That almost went full circle right there. Anyways.
Danny Davis, the wide receiver, also comes out, gets 65 yards rushing and a touchdown. Two rushing touchdowns for Nakia Watson and the first rushing touchdown for Jalen Berger. Jalen Berger looked very good. He looked decisive. He looked like he got to the right spots, and he was able to get downfield and gain those chunk yard plays. Badgers ran 51 rushes, 341 yards, 5 touchdowns. It's like they were just practicing their run game on Michigan, just going right out.
I know Mertz is our quarterback now, but those are the kind of numbers I want to hear from my Badgers team.
The numbers I like hearing are 49 to 11. So that's so exciting. It makes me so happy. That defense, too, is just, I mean, they gave up one touchdown, just one touchdown, and then the double extra point. I mean, but that defense just pinned them in. I mean, they got interceptions on the first two drives of the game. Interception on the first play of the game, the actual offensive play of the game. It was a beautiful game to watch. Badgers were in control the whole way.
And mind you, John, this is the 7:30. This is the Saturday night football game. This is the equivalent to the NFL Sunday night football game. Everyone was watching this game.
The Badgers move up to 9 in a lot of the polls here, too. So that helps a lot.
Everyone watched. Any recruit that was on the fence about whether or not they're going to go to Michigan or Wisconsin just went, here we go.
Yeah, Michigan may not make a bowl game this year. It could be a rough road for them at this point, but the Badgers actually have a very interesting game coming up next week. They will now play Northwestern, who I think is up to 19. It looks like it'll be in Northwestern and there'll be no fans there. So it'll be a normal game in Northwestern.
That was great, John. Nice work.
I stole that from Chris Orr, who they were talking about like beginning of the season. Like, how do you feel, you know, like you're going to be playing all these NFL games in front of no fans? Have you ever had to do anything like that? And he's like, well, I've played at Northwestern a couple times. I was like, that's so good, Chris.
That's fantastic.
But, I mean, like, this game.
Really good. That was a good joke.
This game could be the Big Ten West Championship, basically. Because Northwestern's undefeated. Wisconsin's 2-0. Northwestern's 4-0. Badgers are going to beat Minnesota. They're going to beat Iowa. Then the only other one on the schedule that's really tough. I mean, they got two ranked teams out of their last four here, which feels weird. We're 2-0 and only four left. And we can't miss any because you can't play in the Big Ten title game if you don't play at least six games.
I know. That's the biggest challenge the Badgers are facing right now.
Yeah. And then IU coming up, you know, 3 weeks from now. So this week, Northwestern, then Minnesota, and then IU. Minnesota and IU at home. I mean, the only real difference is you don't have to travel anywhere and you sleep in your own bed. So that's really the only difference for home and away.
I know the field, I guess. I watched most of the IU Michigan State game too. IU's good.
Michigan State, Michigan, and Penn State have combined for as many wins as Wisconsin. We've only played two games. Michigan State.
IU looked really good though. They got some. I mean, they really took it to Michigan. They really took it to Michigan State. That was an interesting game to watch. I was only watching it in passing while I was. Yeah, I had it in the background, so Rutgers, I was studying it.
Rutgers beat them too, so we'll see.
I know, but I'm just saying, Indiana's legit though.
They got good offense. Yeah, the big thing is this Northwestern game coming up this week. I still think the Badgers are going to win that. I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying I don't believe in Northwestern, but who's their last five? So they beat, Maryland. Who looks great when they're playing a terrible Minnesota team and a terrible Penn State team. But yeah, I mean, they've just had, they beat Iowa by one. They beat Nebraska. They beat Maryland and Purdue. I mean, Purdue is a pretty decent win because Purdue is looking pretty good this year, but it's still there. They blew up Maryland. You got a 1-point win against Iowa. They got a 8-point win against a terrible Nebraska team. That team is really bad. And a 7-point win against Purdue, who's looked okay. So we're really going to see what Northwestern is going to be.
I'm really surprised about Nebraska because, you know, they do have that national championship coach leading them now.
That was his only season in which he had a winning record. The only season he's ever had a winning record. I still think the Badgers...
This is honestly the most input I've had on college football in over 5 years, John, since we've started doing podcasts.
The ESPN Power Index makes Wisconsin a 86% chance at winning. They are currently a 7.5-point favorite. I think they win this game. It's going to be tough because Northwestern, they do things to try to at least, you know, find a way to manufacture. You know, it's like an old slap ball type baseball team. They find a way to manufacture a couple points. They'll find a way to get people.
Northwestern's got a lot of smart kids, you know, so they'll make it work. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're also just Northwestern. So it's like, yeah, Wisconsin has smart kids too. And we're also just more talented. So
right.
I think Wisconsin wins this one. It might be a 7 to 10 point type game. And it's going to be up and down for a little bit there, I'm pretty sure. But this Wisconsin team is so good, and they've got so many seniors and great people in great positions. Yeah, I just see Wisconsin winning this one, and I still think they're going to run the table. Indiana's the one I think is going to be the hardest game from here on out.
The biggest thing working against Wisconsin is the fact that they have to play all four games that are left. If they can't,
they got to lock each kid in their room every night, like just hermetically seal off the entire team.
And it's not even them. It's the other teams. And actually, that was another thing that was brought up. Who brought that up today? Oh, Dan Patrick brought that up today. That was Dan or Colin.
Watch Minnesota. Boy, do
Colin,
it just
Colin,
to
Colin Howard's been on the show and been on this podcast a lot tonight. But he brought up that the Badgers didn't get to practice for 2 weeks and then beat up on Michigan that bad, just to add to the insult to injury on Michigan. Like, the Badgers didn't get to practice and still beat them that bad. It's the only thing going against the Badgers is if they can get the games in, and it's not them, it's the other teams. Like, if any of those other teams can't play a game due to the
Watch Minnesota do it just to mess with us.
No, I mean,
just to hand it to Northwestern.
I have to get to Minnesota with you too yet. So, but yeah, no, it's just,
no, we're kind like, of running
if
out
any,
of time.
If any other team can't do it, then the Badgers are. I don't like it, and yeah, I think they're going to roll all over. I think they're going to run the table if they get the chance to, and so, but yeah, no, I just, and so. At what point do we want to talk about how bad Minnesota is? Do we want to do that in the tail?
We'll do that next week, maybe, because we got to get ready for Minnesota in 2 weeks here.
No, I was just going to ask about the fact that Kurt Ferentz called three timeouts at the end of the game after Minnesota called a timeout with 14 seconds left to score their touchdown in garbage time. And Kurt Ferentz said, well, we've already got the pig, so we thought we'd leave the timeouts here in Minnesota before we went home.
That's so good. Way to burn Minnesota. So great.
God.
All right.
You think you hate P.J. Fleck. How about Kurt Ferentz?
All the other coaches hate him. The media loves him because he's like a rah-rah circus show, and he's great for TV, but he makes all the other coaches just mad because he's such a clown. Anyhow, we're going to wrap up everything else that we've got to talk about here in what we lovingly call our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right. So a couple big things. Lauren Bowman, who's backup freshman point guard on the UW basketball men's team, he withdrew from classes. He's got family issues back home. They're not going to go any deeper into that, which they shouldn't. But he's apparently had some family issues, so he's returning home and leaving the Badger program. So that's sad to see, and we definitely wish him the best. One of the other things we do have to talk about, and we should have put it at the beginning, but the golden boy, Paul Horning, passed away. Recently in the Nissan Heisman House commercials like last year, I think. And he was definitely, you could see he was looking kind of rough then. But yeah, he's a classic player. He was a quarterback at Notre Dame. One of the very few, if only, Heisman winners to be on a losing team. Which, of course, is because he was the quarterback at Notre Dame, which helps. And came to the Packers. He basically had an agreement a lot of times with Jim Taylor got all the yards, but Paul Horning just wanted the touchdowns. So Jim Taylor has all these rushing records he had at the time. He's the only guy to ever beat Jim Brown for the rushing title when Jim Brown played. Yep. And meanwhile, Paul Horning set all the scoring records for the Packers because he also kicked the field goals and the extra points when he was done. So, yeah, he got all the touchdowns, and Jim Taylor got him to the goal line. So it was just one of the greatest backfields ever put together.
Vince Lombardi said, too, that Paul Horning was the greatest player that he ever coached.
There was a... if you look up at the numbers
up
there,
is that true, sir, or not? You're gonna shoot that down right now, aren't you?
No, I'm saying if you look up at the stadiums, you see the years they played, and you know some players will be two sets because they left and came back or something like that. Paul Horning, you'll notice, didn't play for the Packers in '63. That's because he gambled and he had to sit out a season. So
yes, he did.
That's one of the reasons why they win. Two in a row, then they didn't win for 2 years, and then they won three in a row. One of them is because Paul Horning had to sit out a full year. So yeah.
And help me out with the math here. Was Paul Horning on the Super Bowl teams or not?
Yes. Yeah, he was
the first one or the second one.
Who was on the first one? I'm trying to remember if he's still there because Anderson was there for some of the second one. He started taking a lot of those carries away too. So I'm trying to remember if he was still there. That was right at the end of his career, if not.
Exactly. That's what I noticed that the other day when they were showing the Ring of Honor. I was like, and I forget about that. I'm like, I don't think Paul Horning was on the second Super Bowl team.
It was only 63. He didn't play. It was 4 and 5. Okay, maybe it was right. Yeah.
Same.
The other thing to bring out is, Wisconsin's 2-0. Yes, football. Right. You say we already covered football, but Wisconsin is 2-0 in men's hockey.
I saw what you did there.
Hockey. They beat the number 20 Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who are a Big Ten team in hockey. The Badgers are now undefeated in Big Ten play in men's hockey. They swept them. It was a 2-0 game on a sloppy opening weekend of hockey. The passing was not particularly crisp, but the Badgers' power play looked better. It looked better than what Notre Dame had. They were moving very well. They had good rotation across the blue line. They cycled down behind the net better than what Notre Dame was able to do. They had all the energy throughout the game. They were able to play with them the whole way. They looked good. and I'm feeling good about that because they have a new goalie because Lebedev left because of COVID concerns and decided to go back to Finland, I believe, and play for money. He's like, I'll just do this for money.
Whichever.
So yeah.
No, that's gonna happen with a lot of the college teams too, especially that have the imports from various other European countries or wherever else. And you know, and unlike the NHL that kept playing, they stopped in March. And
yep, they just ended.
So right up the hill from me, at my armory is the Janesville ice rink, and they had the Janesville Jets play there, and that's a minor or a juniors team, and we let them use our parking lot and the grass around our arena to work out in because they have limited space. And I actually asked a couple of them the other day about how much ice time they've had in the last 8 months, and it's been minimal at best. So a lot of this hockey is going to be sloppy, especially with the amateurs, because you know, where the pros can, some of them have ice rinks in their house, you know, like, oh, come on, the guy from Silver them, yeah. or from Nickel, or the guy from Nickelback has an Olympic rink in his basement. So jeez. I mean, but some of these right. some of these better players, some of these bigger name players have ice rinks in their own house. But anyways, I asked these kids, and they're like, yeah, I saw the least amount of ice time in my entire life in the last 8 months because it was over the summer. Like, where am I going to go? I can't go to a rink. Because all the rinks are shut down, so yeah. I mean, I'm sure with some of this amateur hockey starting up here, it's gonna be a little bit sloppy.
Yeah, it's good. Badgers actually jumped all the way from being essentially 25th. As you know, Aaron, and not everybody else does. U.S. College Hockey Online does rankings down to 20, and then there's the others receiving votes. The Packers were the fifth team down that way. They're the 14th ranked team in the country right now in men's hockey. You know, sweet. Getting back to where we belong, Badgers will this weekend play Michigan, number 6 ranked Michigan, and what should be a very good series of hockey. And yeah, so it's interesting. Like, they had this Badoon, Robbie Badoon. He's a graduate transfer playing goalie for the Badgers now after Lebedev left. He's from Plymouth, Michigan. He came over, I think, from Michigan Tech. So he's a graduate transfer starting for the Badgers now and looked good. The good thing, too, is that the Badgers were very good about making sure that there were not a lot of rebounds. The ones he gave up, they did not get far or they were pushed very quickly away. Linus Weisbach looked great out there. He's the big senior to lead this team, and he has 3 points already with a goal and 2 assists. Very, very active out there and did a very good job playing on the ice. Feel very good about this team. Better than we have. Hopefully they can keep it up. They were very young. They got a lot of sophomores on this team still. And you just kind of hope that they can keep up that energy and continue to do this week in, week out for a full season. They beat a lot of good teams last year. They just then followed it up by losing to bad teams or losing to other good teams. And yeah, the consistency is what needs to happen here. And this has to be the year that they finally get this out of the head coach. This is his fourth year now. And if Granato can't get something out of him here, then they're going to be looking for somebody else. So
yeah, it's not enough. Not enough people named Linus anymore.
Either, that's so true. All right, Aaron, you have anything else to add before we go?
Yeah, I was going to bring this one up. So what do you think about the Bakhtiari extension?
That's correct. I'm very happy about that. I don't know what it means for Aaron Jones going forward, other than that he's almost certainly not a Packer next year.
Not going to be here next year.
I guess I do know what that means. It means he's almost certainly not a Packer next year. Right. I love it. He's a fantastic player. He's going to be he is one of the best left tackles. You can't let that walk.
Well, and so Larry McCarron was talking about it yesterday too, is that so right now the highest paid before this contract extension, Tunsil from Houston was the highest paid left tackle in the league. And he's like, and Bakhtiari is way better than Tunsil. He's much better than Tunsil. I mean, short of a fluke injury a couple weeks ago when he got his probably ribs broken on that weird play where he got crushed sideways, like Bakhtiari is like, you don't ever hear about him. He doesn't jump off sides. He doesn't sacks don't come from that side. That dude's a wall. Like, he is the best left tackle in the league. And anybody who wants to try and argue that, it's like, I guess, you know, it just doesn't happen. And the Packers do, and like, he's such a good lineman, and it feeds down to the other players too. Like, cause you don't have to worry about your left tackle. And so outside of a couple of bogus plays, like we talked about earlier or bogus calls against Turner earlier, this line's been great this year. So, and he's the anchor of that line. And there's a reason why your left tackle should be the second highest paid player on your team. And that's because they're watching the backside of a right-handed quarterback. So there we go. I'm happy with it. Good for him.
All right. Fantastic. I was just trying to see also this. It's going to be another week yet before we start seeing women's hockey. 27th is when the Badgers women start playing Ohio State. So 1-5. Yep. But anyhow, thank you for joining us, everybody, once again for a wonderful week of talking Wisconsin sports. They're all victories this week, even if some of them weren't as great as we wanted them to be. So thank you again for joining us. Remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. And, of course, just remember that whether you are on the town or on the go or safe at home on the couch, it is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.